Welcome to the milk bar. 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 Welcome to the milk bar.
Welcome along. It's episode 178 of the Milk Bar. Jason and Zoe here, and how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. Feeling much, much better.
You sound like a proper person today.
I know. I've had all sorts from the doctors. You some nasal sprays.
You mentioned the nasal spray last week. We were really thrilled by that.
I've had to do a lot of hot steaming as well.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's felt lovely for my skin, actually. It's been very good.
It hasn't really worked on your complexion, but there we are. Right, what have we got coming up on the show today, Zoe?
We have music from Evanstar.
Yes, hearing from them and talking to their guitarist, Gary. Melissa Nichols, the coordinator for Activities for Health in Wolverhampton, joins us on the phone a bit later on too. And we've got an author on the line, haven't we?
Yes, we have. Paul Sammons.
Yes, we'll be hearing about his novel, Redemption. That's on the way in a bit. But first of all, we're joined by Nick Woodbridge, now local lad, just over in Wellington in Telford, and he took part in the pentathlon at the Olympics. Nick, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Now, the Olympics, it must have been a fantastic experience for you.
Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant. I mean, I went to Beijing in 2008, but I think London topped that by far. You can't beat a home crowd, and it would beat my expectations, really.
And the pentathlon itself, though, it's quite, a mixed variety of sports that you're doing there. Explain what you get up to.
Yeah, so we start off in the morning with fencing. We have to fence everybody to one hit, and then you get a certain amount of points per hit, and then we go to the pool, swim 200 metres, and then there's a target time, and then plus or minus that target time, you get a certain amount of points again. And then we have to pick out of a hat for a random horse. We have 20 minutes to get to know that horse, and then we have to take it around the course, and again, for each pole or refusal or misdemeanor we get, then that's points taken off a total score. And then we have the final event, which starts in what they call a Hungarian start. So the points that you have accumulated throughout the day are converted into seconds, and then the leader starts out, and then everybody's chasing him, basically. And we have to show 15 targets and do 3 1K loops, and then the person who crosses the line first is the winner.
And that's all on one day.
That's complicated.
Yeah, all in one day, yeah.
Now, at what point in your youth did you go, I know this is the sport for me? Because that is very hard work.
It's kind of one of those things that you kind of build up to. You never really see it coming until you're kind of already doing it. So you usually start with one or two sports, like biathlons. A lot of the school kids now are doing these biathlons, and then the pentathlon GB are sort of targeting them to bring them into the sport. So they'll just be thinking about doing the two sports, and then kind of someone will come along and say, oh, how do you fancy picking up shooting? Because when you're younger, you only do three sports internationally, and then they do four sports, and then they do five sports when you come to about 17. So you kind of just build into it, and people just kind of gradually add on the events before you know you're doing pentathlon.
I suppose it's nice to have like a round of activities, isn't it, that you can do well?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it never gets boring. Training never gets boring. You're not always in the pool or always doing one thing, so it's great.
And how do you actually approach the training on that then? Because it must be very full-time for having five different activities to get absolutely spot on.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I think if you do it, you're generally doing it at a high level, because it's not one of those things you can just do almost as a hobby, because there's so many things to do. So yeah, it is a really full-time thing. And you kind of plan around your weaknesses, really. You put more time into your weaknesses and then build around that. But you put the physical disciplines as far away from each other throughout the week, and then build in the skills around that, because they're less physically exerting on you. So it has to be quite detailed for each person, because they all have their own weaknesses. So it can be that everyone's doing a slightly different thing within the program.
Yeah, I suppose perhaps if you're doing like five sports, you might have two or three that you're really good at, and then perhaps a couple that you're not so good at. And you have
absolutely
to make up for the points in the sports that you are good at.
Exactly. It's all about spending time on the events where you think you can make up the most points, not about doing your favourite events, unfortunately.
have you got a particular favourite out of the ones that you do, or do you enjoy all of them?
Fencing, actually, I think is the most fun. But it's not actually my best. My best is swimming. But I enjoy fencing. It's good. It's quite nice socially, because you're not always on the go. You're kind of sitting down between fights. And it's just good fun sport to do.
Now, this equestrian side of things, though, where I can't believe that you just don't even know the horse, because that's the really big part of most of the equestrian events, isn't it? Because they've worked with the, you know, it's part of the family, the horses, yet you get to meet a stranger and have to go off and ride it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is strange, and a lot of people hear about that, especially if they're from the equestrian world, they're surprised, and they say to us, like, that must be such a challenge, and it is. But the idea is that if you're a better rider, you get a higher percentage of the horses around the course, and that is generally how it works out. And the idea is as well that all the horses are fairly equal, and it does turn out like that as well. So it is generally it is fair, and it's a good challenge.
It sounds really impressive. I'm not entirely sure I could even manage to get on a horse, let alone contain one I'd never met before. But so the horse probably knows just as well what it's doing as you do when you're meeting up with it. So
yeah, I think so.
Obviously, it was a long road to the Olympics for London 2012. Rio is the next place most Olympians are looking to. Now, that means you're going to be, what, 30 when that comes around?
Yeah, we'll be 30 years old, yeah.
And now, in your sport, that's not a particular issue, because if swimming's your strongest point at the moment, that's obviously, cross-country running's a bit physically exerting as well, but the swimming's probably going to be the hardest of the sport. So with that as your peak, you're going to be fine going forward, probably until you're 34 before you're even thinking about maybe taking it a little easier.
Yeah, well, I think if you look at the podium in 2008, I think all the guys there were over 30 that won a medal. So it's definitely a possibility. It's just depending whether you think, firstly, your body will hold up, and whether you want to do it, whether you're going to enjoy to do it. I don't think you know that at this point in time. I think you take it year by year, and that's certainly how I'm going to take it. I'm going to take it the next year and then make a decision probably after the next year and then set my sights on Rio.
And how soon would the preparations for Rio start? Because obviously you're taking part in events the whole time. You are still competing. It doesn't stop just because it's not London 2012 anymore.
Like, the preparations are always going on. I mean, you're always trying to improve your weaknesses, and that's how it is, and that's how we'll continue to do it through the next year. But when I really start to look at Rio, it will probably be from kind of 2.5 years out. But the process won't change. Like, it's all about improving your weaknesses.
And what competitions have you got on the way in the near future?
There's a series of World Cups again, which start in February, and they're every month until about July. And then we have Europeans in July and World Championships in September.
An enjoyable summer for you, and a great experience, I'm sure, down in London for that time. And I should think it was probably a different world, wasn't it, living in the athlete's village?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a strange little world, because it is. Everyone's kind of high-performance athlete, and you wander around and you see different people that you know, or that you know as being famous, just walking around. There's so many people in that village. It is incredible. It's an incredible kind of week when you're there. But it's very difficult for us, because we're at the very end. So some people will have finished their events by the time it comes around to us. So we're still very focused, where everybody else will be enjoying themselves.
Yeah, they go from party. You have to keep swimming, shooting and everything else until keep the training going.
Exactly.
Well, good luck with the continued training. We shall look forward to seeing your name during the World Cups next year, and of course the European Championships as well. And we will hopefully hear more from you as you head on, and your name in lights in Rio, we trust.
That would be nice, yeah. Thank you very much.
Nick, great speaking to you. Thanks for
that. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Ta-ra for now.
Bye-bye.
Star, and I Won't Regret, their brand new single, just released. And to tell us more about it and the band is their guitarist, Gary. Hello, sir.
Hi there, how are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
Yes, I'm brilliant, thank you very much.
Smashing. Now, September.
September, yes.
It all started in September.
Which September?
Yes.
September this year, and you get to the point at which you have a single out already.
Yes, we do.
And you've got the track Take My Handle here next, and the single B-side Living Nightmares will also hear today. And I suppose you're gearing up for plenty of gigs and stuff as well, aren't you?
Yes, we are, yes. We've been, everything starts for us like properly next year, so we've been doing quite a few shows to get ready for next year, just to make sure we're rehearsed when it comes.
Now, how did this lot come together then? Because you've got a couple of people with the surname Yates in the band.
Yes, that's my brother. Yeah, everything came together through lots of different bands and different lineup changes and stuff. It's been like a big mess that somehow fell into what we finally found.
And so with all this creativity sort of crash landing together, that's the reason why a couple of months down the line you're actually ready to go and you've got singles on iTunes.
Yes. It took us a while to get all our stuff together, but now we finally have everything. That we're all a collective unit, finally. Everything's just happening really quickly, and it's exciting.
Well, give us the rundown on the band, then. Who have we got in there?
Who's in there? There's myself, I'm the guitarist, songwriter. We have Stuart Instrill, who's our singer. He plays rhythm guitar as well. Said earlier, my brother's in the band, Mikey Yates, and on drums for us is Daniel Farnell.
And you say you came together from several different bands. Obviously, you'd known your brother for a few years beforehand. But had you known everybody else as well? Is that what actually happened?
Yes. Well, I studied music at college a few years ago, I think about 2008. And that's where I met Stuart. Mm-hmm. Dan came around through an audition for a previous band that we had. He was just perfect and completely kind of changed our style. So decided to start a scratch kind of thing. Mm.
Where did the name come from?
The name? Well, we were desperately trying to find something short and sweet. Like previous band names we've had have been really quite long and hard to remember and a bit embarrassing when you have to try and tell someone what your band's called. So me and Stuart, we came across a band name we really liked. It was Evermore, but it was already taken by someone in Australia. So it somehow kind of evolved into Evanstar. There it is. Pretty much.
And how far along are you with your songwriting? I mean, is it just the three you've got, or are there plenty more in the pipeline?
There's plenty more in the pipeline. We record our first EP in February next year. We've got about five or six songs already, but we're going to be continuing to write up to the end of December when we pick the final five.
And how far have you got, did you say, with your touring for next year? Have you got anything definitely booked in this year?
We haven't got anything definitely yet, but there'll definitely be news to follow from January. As many places as we can.
And you know, you're based over in Leicester, so it should be fairly easy if people are liking the sound to be able to get over and hear you, even if you're playing local gigs. But does that mean you're heading over towards Wolverhampton at any point that you know to yet, or is it maybe something you'll be looking at as you come to book more dates?
Yeah, definitely. It'll be definitely something that we come to you know, prepare for like January and stuff. But Wolverhampton is definitely somewhere we'd like to kind of show ourselves.
Mm-hmm. How's it been going? Because you've only been together for like such a short amount of time. Have you got like a regular fan base that follows you, or?
Well, we've got like of course like your friends and family and stuff, but we've been like heavily on promotion with this band. We seem to have just found the formula that works, whereas before we were kind of like, oh, we're not sure how to get out there, we're not sure how to like reach the families. But we're a lot more organised and focused.
So you seem to have like all the Twitter pages and the Facebook pages and everything all set up, and it's a good way to get yourself, your name and your sound out there, really, isn't it, through those websites?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're under management now as well, and we're under like a PR company. Getting our songs to places we could get them to has become a lot easier. Fingers crossed, a fan base can grow from that.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with that. I mean, you're at a point where several bands are normally two or three years down the line before they actually get to this point. But with the experience you've got in the industry already, a couple of months is pretty much all you need. And we wish you every success. Looking forward to hearing more of your tunes. And tell us a bit about where I Won't Regret actually came from, as you're the main songwriter.
I won't regret. That was basically a song that was based around making a choice, you know, between, say, the vision I had in my head at the time was like a relationship and like an opportunity to follow your dreams. And it's basically just about picking that decision and not looking back on it.
We're looking forward to hearing the rest of the music. Next up is Take My Hand, and we'll sit back and listen to more tunes from Reverend Starr. Thanks for joining us, Gary.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Cheers. Ciao for now.
Bye-bye.
Evan Starr and Take My Hand. Now, Zoe, this is an interesting one. This is all about people who've used art to improve their health. Activities for Health, as the programme's been put together. Wolverhampton City Council are the ones who've been doing it. And we have the coordinator of Activities for Health, Melissa Nichols, on the phone. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. Now, hopefully I got everything right as we went along there. Please explain what's been taking place, because there's been 10 classes in several semesters, and it's been part of respite care for people over the age of 18, hasn't it?
Yes. We have 10 classes on at the moment, and we have them for the past year. It used to be known as Art for Health, but now it encompasses several other classes as well, such as yoga, relaxation and collage. So we've got some fairly well attended groups and it's going really well, and we've got the exhibition on at the moment at the foyer building at Old Hall Street.
Now, that is on from now right the way through until the 4th of January next year.
It is, yeah, and that's at the Wolverhampton Adult Education Service.
And that's on St George's Parade. And that, how do people, first of all, get referred to these classes?
OK, well, there are a number of ways. Usually the prospective learner would take a referral form to either the GP or other health professional. So we deal with people from, say, Heaton Housing and several other places like that, and various surgeries around Wolverhampton as well. And the learner can fit in their form, get their health professional to fill in the other side, just reference which class they're interested in. They send the form back to me at the Wolverhampton Adult Education Service, and then I will telephone them and just have a chat with them and which class would be right for them and when they can get started.
Well, what sort of illnesses are people... do people have to be able to get on one of these courses?
That sounds an odd way of putting it, Zoe.
It does sound a bit strange.
I think what you were trying to say was, what illnesses do we feel that this helps with?
Okay. Is there any illness that's excluded, perhaps?
Okay. It's for anyone over the age of 18 who are suffering with either mild depression, anxiety, anything like that, or it's for carers who are looking for respite, basically. So it gives them some time to focus on some creative and it's just to help them with relaxation techniques and so on. We have several art classes and, as I mentioned before, yoga, relaxation and collage. And during the summer, we also put on some short courses, like taster courses. So summer just gone, we did a well-being course, which included singing, drawing skills and some yoga as well.
And it sounds like a really interesting collection of different things to do. So it all started with the art and has moved on from there. This is actually what brought together the exhibition. It is more the art side of it. You're not making people stand in the corner and sing, are you?
No. Although the singing group do that. For the exhibition that's on at the moment, you'll see a collection of mostly from the art groups. There's lots of artwork there, ranging from pencil sketching to painting. We've also got some great work from the collage class as well. So they've done some mosaic work and things like that. And also we have a nice sort of presentation board that the relaxation group have done. They've kind of talked about the things that they've been through and how their feet have kind of walked them through it, if you like. And that's it, really.
Is there any limit to how many times somebody can attend, say, a set of classes? So, or can they just keep coming for as long as they want to once they're on them?
The semester runs for 15 weeks. And what we do is, at the end of each semester, we kind of have a chat to everybody and assess them. It's kind of on a first-come, first-served basis. So we are chatting to them to find out how they're getting on, and then we talk about progression as well. So there's an art class that's at the Wolverhampton Gallery, and so those who've been with us for a couple of semesters, we would help them with progression maybe onto that group.
Oh,
or
nice.
We talk about getting into mainstream classes. So there's no limit, really. It's just about needs for the individual, really.
Well, it's a brilliant way of doing it, and great to have the exhibition to show off as well.
Yes. Very good. You know, with my group this morning, we had a look round so they could see what the other groups have been doing, and they were all really proud of, you know, to see their work up and on the wall and things, so it was good.
It is very relaxing as well, and I can imagine, you know, there is a lot of illnesses which are helped by either, I don't know, walking or yoga or, like you say, art.
And it's much more of a proactive approach to it, rather than just saying, oh, there's something wrong with you, get over it.
Mm.
It actually gives you the chance to work through what's going on. It's not therapy, which can be, you know, off-putting to people. It's actually a realistic adjustment of their lives to give them, you know, a focus. And it's not, you're really saying, well, they really just need a bit of you time.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really good for everybody who joins in, because they get to meet people who might be going through the same things. They can talk about their experiences, and, you know, they have like they can create like a network, really, of friends who are going through similar things. And it's just, like you say, it's just a really good way of focusing on something positive and being creative, really.
It's something that they can carry on their own at home as well, isn't it? So if they think that they need a bit of time out, they can just pick up a pencil or paints and do something at home as well.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on how well you've done so far. And the exhibition sounds like it's really worthwhile coming to have a look at. And people can just sort of pop along and have a look around?
They can, yes. And they're also, for anybody who might be interested in the classes, the referral forms are there at reception. So you can just pick one of those up and take it away with you.
And if people do want to get in touch as well, how do they do that?
They can contact me at the Wolverhampton Adult Education Service. The telephone number is 1902-558-164. And if you can't get hold of me, then somebody will pass a message on to me and I can contact you.
Or for general inquiries, inquiries at aes.wolverhampton.gov.uk, and I'll be able to pop you in touch with Melissa that way.
Yes.
Well, so the exhibition's on from now until Friday, the 4th of January next year, and that's at the Adult Education Services Foyer Building, St George's Parade in Wolverhampton. And what time is the centre open?
It's open from 9 till 7 usually, I think, during the week. I'm not quite sure, because there are evening classes that go on as well. So.
And if you want to get down there, so you can see what's happened, if you think that maybe somebody will help you or somebody you know, then certainly do get in touch.
Yeah.
Melissa, thanks for joining us. Lovely to speak to you, and keep us posted, because it sounds like there'll be another exhibition in a not too many months' time.
Okay, thank you.
Cheers. Ciao for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Evan Starr and Living Nightmare.
Star and Living Nightmares here on the Milk Bar, and now we go to somebody who's written a crime thriller. It's called Redemption. He's Paul Sammons, and he joins us now on the phone. Hello, sir.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Not too bad, thank you. Not too bad.
So explain to us how you come to write yourself a crime thriller, because you actually work in the world of training and IT, don't you?
I do. I've been in training for about 8 years, and I felt I needed a creative output. So I joined many, many years ago a creative writing group.
Mm-hmm.
It was an open university online thing, just so I could see if I could actually manage to get anything on paper. I decided partway through that course, yeah, okay, I could do this. Had some ideas brewing and put those ideas down on paper.
And that's out now in a book?
It's out now as a digital download.
Oh, okay.
So the magical world of Amazon means that publishing is a lot simpler to do, and if somebody has got an idea and they want to see what sort of reaction you can get to it, it is a good way of getting that out there. And you can do it at a sensible price. So people who are now looking at Christmas and buying themselves Kindles or Nooks or whatever else those odd devices are called, they can actually buy a copy of the book, read it for a sensible price, and by doing so, spur you on to more writing, I suppose.
Absolutely, indeed. I mean, the book's on sale for just over £1, like £1.02, given Amazon pricing structure. But yeah, it's basically a quid. You can download it to your Kindle or most modern phones, tablets, PCs. I've got the Kindle app.
Mm-hmm.
It's got my book out there. So I'd recommend anybody that wants to do it, that's got some ideas, give it a go.
So it is a crime thriller.
Is
this something that you take an interest in when you're watching TV as well? Your thing is you watch films that have normally got something quite horrible, graphic and violent in them.
I think you've summed me up pretty perfectly there, yeah.
I must admit, I do like reading a crime thriller. Is it one of those where you kept guessing right to the very end as to who's done it?
It is. That's the way I've structured it, yeah. You don't know who the perpetrator is right up until the end chapter or two. So you have to keep reading all the way through.
Do you leave like little clues along the way?
Little tiny itty-bitty clues. You as the reader pick up the clues as the detectives that are working the crime, that they will pick up the clues and you get those clues at the same time.
Yeah.
So
that must be so difficult to plan, I think.
It took a little bit of planning, yeah.
So was there a massive storyboard on the wall at home that helped you sort of work through it to make sure you picked up all the right bits at the right time?
Do you know what? Honestly, it all came through my head. I don't write, I don't plan anything, I don't put notes on the walls. I literally start at the beginning and work my way right through to the end in the hope that when I get to the end, it all makes perfect sense.
Do you get something halfway through that surprises yourself, even as you're writing it, then? I can imagine that happening.
as cliched as it sounds, and somebody once told me this, that the characters start talking for themselves.
Yeah.
And it's actually true. I got partway through writing it, and I wrote one conversation between two characters, and I thought, wait a minute, he wouldn't actually say that. So I had to rewrite it because the character wouldn't say what I'd put those words in for him. So yeah, the characters do take on a life of their own.
Yeah.
So you've basically got a load of new imaginary friends with this hobby of solving crime. but have you got a central character though? Someone like your version of Poirot or Miss Marple who's going to be there through potentially a series of books?
It is a series of books, funnily enough. I'm actually working on the sequel at the moment. And it's two characters. There's two lead characters that... The story is told sort of from both of their perspectives, and that's going to continue throughout the series, or what envisages the series to be, yeah.
As well as, the story, then this runs through, there's obviously some quirky bits along the way. Have you been able to set it in places that you know or you've been to just to make it a bit more interesting and personal for you?
I've actually created the area that it's set. I've set it in a small out-of-season seaside resort, which is completely fictitious. I was going to set it in Birmingham. Then if I hadn't got the geography absolutely spot on and the people living in Birmingham that have read it would say, that's not there and that's not there. So I thought, no, I'm going to scrap it. I'm going to start off, create my own town and everything and everybody that goes around there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is sometimes nice to read a novel based where you are, but they do have to get it spot on right. I know when I read a Tom Holt book, I think it was Valhalla, which features Smethwick, which is where my parents are from. And there's a vivid description of the wrath of the gods blowing up Spon Lane duck pond. And I think that worked quite well, but I've always been tempted to go back and see whether the wall was in the right place. So you don't have that problem. You've got your fictional seaside resort. And have you... I don't know how it works on the Kindle. So I have got one. I have actually got a copy of the book on my Kindle. I'm not read it yet. But
you should. It's really good.
Okay, I will do. I paid a penny for it because I didn't manage to blag this one, which is quite annoying. But do you actually have to write like the notes for the back of this the dust cover as well? Is it like a full proper book? So is there a blurb?
Yeah, it is an actual full-blown production book, if you like. There's the blurb on the back, there's the acknowledgement, there's the copyright notes. I've even got one of my best friends to design the front cover for me, so it's all been done as you would a proper book, just without the paper.
And is it going to be a possibility, perhaps, that it's taken up by a publisher, and is that what you're hoping from that?
That would be absolutely amazing, but I've said to people before that I didn't get into writing a book to make millions. I did it as a creative outlet for me, just a way to relax, to get rid of the stresses of the day by putting the stresses on somebody else. So I would love
it's not leading into your inner thoughts, is it, this book? It's not.
I daren't answer that.
We shall wait and see. Actually, your friends and family have read this, so what has this changed their perception of you?
No. They all knew I was a bit weird anyway.
Oh, that's okay. Right. As long as it's not no new traits.
No new traits.
And obviously, it's on out there on Amazon. You have been having, it's been purchased. People who don't know you have been buying this book.
But Indeed, they have.
Are there any contact details in there as well? Can they get in touch and talk to you if they want to?
I'm guessing if people are that desperate to want to contact me, they can reach me through Facebook.
So if they were to search for you as an author on Facebook, they could. And
they can indeed.
Then you would be there. They would be able to interact and tell you exactly what they think of your strange mind.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It would be nice to have some feedback, though, to be fair. I think I'd want people to contact me to let me know whether they'd enjoyed it, whether there was something they'd want done differently.
It's absolutely brilliant to have somebody turn around. Even somebody turn around and say, well, I actually didn't like that part, or that part didn't work for me. It's better to have constructive comments. Absolutely. I'd rather people be honest and say, oh, yes, that was lovely, and think in the back of their minds that was actually a bag of cack.
Well, Jason can let you know.
When I get into it, I am normally quite critical. So, you will find out. How many pages would this be if it's physically on paper as well? I mean, is it a massive one that would stop the coffee table wobbling, or is it just more of a pamphlet?
Not quite. It's around about 400 pages if it was on printed paper.
Because on your Kindle, you can change the size of the font. So if you have it really big with one letter per page, it could go on forever.
5,000 pages, yeah.
Yeah, reading it would be difficult. And do you think the next one's probably going to be a longer novel now? You're sort of settling down into it.
To be honest, I've wrote about 17,000, 18,000 words, and I've barely broke the back of the story yet.
It's going to be a big book.
It will be a considerably larger book, yeah. The characters are evolving a little bit more.
And I don't know how it works on Amazon. Are you able to buy something, then flag it to tell you when there's more available from that author?
Yes, you are. Yeah, you should be able to.
One to do now. Go and spend your quid, whatever it is, this time round. And the next one may well end up being more because he's going to be a bit popular by then.
No, I'll keep it cheap. Absolutely.
Paul, give us full details then on how you can buy it, what we're looking for, because the title's Redemption.
It is indeed.
And you search for Paul Sammons in Amazon.
It is. If you go to Amazon, search Paul Sammons Redemption, you're looking for the Kindle version.
Mm-hmm. And how do we spell this?
Wonderful. Sammons, S-A-M-M-O-N-S.
And you're about to say on the picture.
I'm going to sell that front cover again by one of my best mates, who does get credit in the book for it, has designed the front cover for me. It's an absolutely brilliant piece of artwork.
Okay, and you can pick that up. Is it full colour online as well?
It is full colour.
It depends on your Kindle. If you've got a Kindle Fire, it looks flashy. If you've got the standard one, which is what I've got, because it was free.
It's a bit black and white.
It's a bit black and white, yeah. But, there we go. Right, Paul, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Good luck with your next book. Let us know when that's out. What's your expected delivery date at the moment? You being your own publisher, what deadline have you set you?
I've set myself probably May to June next year.
So you've got plenty of time to read the first one before you get the second one and build up that excitement and anticipation for the next book.
Absolutely. The first book, I will forewarn you, does leave you on a cliffhanger ready for book two.
Oh, right. Okay. And what's the name of the series then?
I haven't come up with the name of the series. Each book is going to have an individual title with common characters connecting them throughout, but told from a slightly different perspective in each one.
Okay, we will have to read them. Obviously, it's been cagey.
Indeed.
Paul, thank you for joining us. Good to speak to you. And we look forward to not only actually bothering to getting round to reading your first book and also looking at the next in the series, middle of next year.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
Cheers. Bye for now.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.
So there we are. All done for this week. Back next week for more.
Yes.
And just this is ahead of my Singapore trip, so we've got a busy week recording shows.
So bring me something exotic back.
We'll talk about that when we do the next show. We'll run through a list of things that you do and don't want, okay? That sounds reasonable to me. But until then, ta-ra for now.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye from the milk bar. 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 Yeah. Goodbye from the milk bar. Yeah.